Hello, everybody. This is Bart Sharp, and this is Becoming Quantum Conscious on United Public Radio Network and UFO Paranormal Radio Network, from broadcasting out of the beautiful city of New Orleans, Louisiana, on 107.7 and 105.3. And we are on the radio out of New Orleans, but also on the internet at the UPRN website, as well as on Roku, Facebook, YouTube, Spreaker, and other internet platforms all around the world. And we are on the other side of the world with our guest today. And my first question would be, like, which is hotter, Austin, Texas, or Egypt right now? Because we're about on the same latitude. It's a nice sunny day here. But we have Hakeem Awiyal. And Hakeem is a historian, scholar, temple worker, a tour guide. He has his own tour business, along with his partner, Karina, who was on the show a couple of months ago with the astrology show. And they have a most unique approach to the history and how Egyptian spirituality works. So I'm excited about this hour. And so, Hakeem, welcome to the show.
Hello, Bart. Welcome, everybody. So excited to be here with you. It's it is sunny, good day, a little bit windy in here, but it's still very good, sunny and good.
Oh, good. Good. We're on the same wavelength, about the same here. And you have been, like, as we talked before, it's almost like you have just inherited a lot of this knowledge, but also your grandfather, same name, Hakeem Awiyal.
Yes, Hakeem
was the creator of a term called chematology.
Chematology.
And could you share a little bit about his journey and what chematology is?
His journey, that he studied Egyptian history at King Farouk University, which is Cairo University now. And after some times of his own research, he started to speak differently about our history, realizing that there is many is missing. Changed. And as soon as he started to speak, our archaeologist, which is his colleagues, decided this is not Egyptology. You're talking about something different. So he said, okay, I will use the old name of Egypt, which is Kemet, and name the science Kemetology. And this is how it started. So Kemetology is actually the different point of view that it changes the archaeologist belief or old belief of our history as humans generally, not just Egyptians.
Yes, and it is an old history. I mean, as I've studied you, you were what I really believe that Egyptian history could be 60,000 plus years old.
At this point, it is many more than one theory. Archaeologists believe it's 7,000 years, sorry. Geologists, and many of them we have worked with, to analyzing the what's happening as stones and trying to figure out the site, mentioned 50, 60,000 and more. And yeah. My personal point of view in looking at that is more the things that it's more simple than the buildings, the teachings, the knowledge. I think for a nation to reach this amount of awareness and understanding of nature and understanding of themselves, which is beyond what we know in levels, needs thousands of years, way more thousands of years that we count today with our regular trying to analyzing history, the regular way trying to analyze history.
Yeah, I so much agree. And I think part of the proof that that's true is when we start to look at the pyramids and try to explain it the way the archaeologists say that, oh, it took 20 to 40 years to build these pyramids that are seem to be impossible. I mean, some people say that it would actually be impossible for them to stand erect in that design with that much weight, but yet they do. Therefore, we must have been evolved to a high level in order to construct something so beyond science, basically, because we don't know how it's all put together.
It's amazing. It is very, very difficult just to know where to start to see the challenges. Sorry if the words takes time to find.
No,
just yeah. Many people speak about the impossibility of the moving of the huge blocks of stones and cutting these solid pieces of stones and puzzle them with this most accurate way and the engineering of it. I have worked with my uncle, his name is Yusuf. He's an engineer, and the amount of things that we saw in the plateau needs an hour by itself. Just the size of the blocks and the amount of precision and work.
Yes.
And what fascinated me more, actually, when is the why, is the reason behind this. And because the other options do exist, and it's a lot easier when you can do things more simple way, and it will be a lot easier. It's still a huge question mark till today for many, many people.
It is. And when we study things like ley lines, the Giza is connected to other power spots all throughout Europe, probably in the Middle East as well. And it generates tremendous amounts of energy and is connected to no telling what in the universe. And it's all flowing, it's all working, just like so many pyramids all over the world.
Around the world. And that's what makes me believe that it was not just an Egyptian thing. It was an international kind of knowledge. And it's a building have a benefit. This is why another people will decide to take the suffer and the effort to build. It must be for a functionality, not just a tomb or something symbolic for a king.
Yes. And you mentioned in it that you really believe that that there was more organic type of tools, maybe such as sound healing or not sound healing, but sound tools that maybe cut the stones or move them or things of that nature that are just beyond our human science at this point.
I do believe that. And I have more than one way to see why I think this. The ancient Egyptian in their religion, or what we call today religion, which is not, it was more of a science or something that they believe, introduced to us more than one force that they named it the word Neter, which is N-T-R. And our archaeologist translated this as the word God. And we understood it as the word God of our understanding today, the one that is up high in the sky and we pray for. But the ancient wanted to capture them as forces of nature. The word Neter is the descendant of the word nature in all language, nature, natur, naturala, and all the language, it's the same three letters that started in the ancient Egyptian language. And the harnessing these powers of nature can make the human with his same capacity that we know of today capable of a lot. Because I am not trying to assimilate the powers of nature, I am actually using it. So I'm making it a lot easier.
Almost like aligning and guiding it to where it has a more focused purpose.
For my own good.
Yes.
For whatever purpose I am trying to reach.
For the good of all.
For the good of all. So there is a piece of device now in the Egyptian Museum that the archaeologists identify as a lotus vase or an empty vase. And it's a disc, circular piece made out of schist, very solid stone, and empty from all the sides. So you cannot contain nothing in it. And my grandfather used to think that this is part of a machine, that these two circles spin against each other, creating an anti-gravity field. So no matter what, the block weights will be easier to carry and put around.
Wow.
And this device, this piece still exists in the Egyptian Museum.
Wow. So it would be like one circle, one disc would be going in one direction, the other would go in an opposite. Almost like two gears meshing together, but they're not meshing, and they're going at a high level speed.
High level speed. It creates a frequency, and this frequency, if I sealed it by strong walls from the four sides, the sound will hit the walls and echo, and by that I have an anti-gravity field that can make me build however I want. And in some of the sites till today, we can see what the archaeologist named an imaginary door, which is a three-level door carved inside the wall, that I think it's made just to make the sound more stronger or higher echo.
So maybe the circles, and this would be a clockwise direction and a counterclockwise direction, going and interacting with each other. And as what you're saying is that it would actually change the structure of the rock itself to where it becomes a different substance.
I am not sure how it would work. It could change the stone reaction to the magnetic pulse of the earth, or it can make it less in the area around.
Wow.
Not in all the area, but in the area that you that you blocked.
Wow.
And what can a little bit push on my point, that most of the ancient pieces is aligned to the magnetic north, which is maybe they did use to levitate the pieces.
Interesting. Aren't all pyramids also aligned with the magnetic north?
With the magnetic north. The heavy boxes, the big stones, all have a corner or a side aligned with the magnetic north.
So why do you think the magnetic north is so important to align with?
Because of what you just said, if the piece itself or the piece of stone itself have a positive area and a negative area, and you change that by somehow, instant of it attaching to the ground, it will float. Positive, positive, negative, negative. You know, remember when we used to play with the magnets?
Oh, yes.
It will simply float and will be very easy to move it after.
Wow. It also goes along with one of the principles of physics. And my father taught me this one because he worked in the oil fields, drilling for petroleum or oil. And of course, what they would do is the drill would go down and it would be turning into the earth against all of these rocks. And for the drill to be able to penetrate and break these rocks down easier, they would bring down tons of air that would circulate in that hole and thus create less pressure less density in that situation. You know, so it does have a little bit of practical physics with this, yet we could only assume that the ancient Egyptians were not turning something so fast in a physical means, but maybe something else.
Maybe.
Something, you know, those discs going. They probably weren't on a big machine doing that.
And how would the machine turn? This is also was a big question for me. You know, like, it is complicated, and it's still a huge question mark. But at least we're sure it is not what it's not what we did learn in the school, that it is 6,000 years ago built by humans in 20 or 40 years. Using rams and wood trunks and things like that, you know. He used to call it chat. This is a story that it is not. It cannot be possible because there is pieces in the Giza plateau that it's 120 ton, just one piece. And this should came from Aswan all the way to here. And with our advanced machining today, nothing can carry that piece, one piece in the Nile. The boats wouldn't carry one piece like this. And that's one rock.
Yes. And in your article, you were saying that it's not just one form of rock, but it's granite and basalt.
Basalt.
Diorite, alabaster, white calcite.
Calcite.
Sandstone and limestone. So they used a variety of rocks.
Many variety of rocks, and the same names of the rocks in all the areas that had the same type of technology or the same type of manufacturing, like the Giza Plateau. So this is why we think it is required for the functionality, the amount of quartzite in each piece, or the amount of Velspar in each piece was not by chance. It was well done, chosen. And that was a research made by a geologist. Her name is Susan Moore.
Okay.
She made a wonderful research about the pieces of red granite that was chosen. Most of it is above 60% of quartzite, and this you need to mine deeper into the mountain to find it, which is way harder than bringing the collected pieces or the smaller one on the surface.
Wow.
For I work on stone, I carve as well. And when we have a small piece that you want to make sure there is no cracks or anything in it, you just, till today, we still hit on the piece and make sure there is no bad sound, so you start to carve on it. I cannot know how would you identify today by your eyes how strong this piece is if it's 4 meters by two. You know,
because you want this super cohesiveness and no internal cracks in it to be able to withstand the pressure that a pyramid would be carrying. You want the perfect stone.
Exactly. And choosing the perfect stone is a science. And I'm not putting the evidence, the pyramid is right there. If knowing this by itself, removing all the idea of what we know about our human history and how short our life they think it is. We are very old on this planet, been here for longer than what the book says.
Yes,
we have a long history.
No, and everything I've read about Egyptian history, which is not enough, but nobody can really tell me the origins of it. Like, nobody really knows when it began, as far as I know. It was just a well-established culture, you know, longer than we can remember.
When it begins, I don't think it's, we cannot see it because we are looking only on Egypt today. And I think it is not the size of Egypt that we can identify today. This knowledge and the beginning of it was internationally, was something around the globe, not just Egypt. Maybe it survived in Egypt. This is why we see it and we think it is Egyptian 100%. But I think from the beginning till today, it is human history, not Egyptian history.
That's a good way to look at it, because
In
my explorations of Southwest France, and I do tours over there, just like you do tours. The name of your website is Geb and Nut Journeys, and that would be GEBANDNUT journeys.com. Hakeem leads tours in, I guess, beginning in October of this year. Is that correct? You're waiting until it cools down a bit.
Yes.
But, you know, it's as we both do these tours, we've learned a lot about the land. And I'm seeing some of the same things in France. I'm not seeing pyramids, perchance, but four ton stones sitting on three rounded rocks in a small cave, for example. It's like, how did that get there? This is all over France, all over Europe, all over the world. And I so agree with you that this was a, you know, various societies.
Internationally. Yeah.
Internationally.
The pieces of stones you speak about, I can easily identify this as we call recycled temples.
Mm.
Like a site is originally very ancient, made for a certain deity or an aspect, and then it's changed for a different one, and then it's changed for a different one. But the place itself and what happens in it is still the same from thousands of years. But the science of archaeology look at the last stage of the building, but not the history of all of it. He only analyze how is it standing right now. I'm sure this has become hundreds of purposes for the temples you have in France, and it have changed. Similar to what happened in here. We have here temples that the temple became a Greco-Roman temple, and then it became a church, and then it became a mosque. And now it's still a place you can visit, and the four aspects is still running, working in the temple, which is the Luxor temple. It have the ancient temple of Amun. It have a Greco-Roman temple in the end of it, which is in the same property, and a church and a mosque. And all of it have holographics on the four sides. And we know where it is a holy place, and we keep doing what we normally do. The names of gods change, but the people still doing the same things, having those habits.
And you were telling me that there's evidence or beliefs, I'm not for sure which, that even there's structures underneath these holy places as well that are much, much older. Of course.
Yeah. Yes, there is temples that it's built on top of temples, or temples that was reused only the high point of it, and the rest still buried underneath.
Wow.
And some of the under or the tunnels constructions was built with the building itself at the time for a use, and the priest himself start to remove this use till it became no longer accessible. Under the Giza plateau itself have a huge net of tunnels dug into the mountain that we believe it was made for the water to run inside of it. As for the plateau, I think that's
very true with also the pyramids in Croatia. There's an underground system there, and they've been finding that out and using those waters for healing people.
For healing. This is where the idea of holy water came from to us. It's a purified water that it's carrying the vibe of the netr. Per netr, which is what means the house of the god. The house of the god. Mm-hmm. And when the water passes into the house of the god, it carries from his aspect. This is how they describe it, how the ancient describe it. And then when the people drink it, we have his aspect. Which is...
And also, it also goes back to the word that you mentioned before, in nature.
Netter. Netter. Yes, which is what the archaeologist explained as God or deity. And of course, it is the source of the word nature, as we... Or natur. Did we say that before the recording or after? I forgot. We had some nice conversation before. So back to the point. This is why I called our website Jep and Nut. Jep is the god of the land.
And that would be G-E-B, folks.
G-E-B.
God of the land.
And he connect with the god. With the goddess Nut, which is the goddess of the sky, N-U-T. And with both of them, they created the four directions and then life started. And what we do in our tours is basically same thing, but as teachings and visits. We use the construction of the temple on a certain day where the stars is aligned with it, so we can harness the energy of the temple and the day we visit the temple.
Wow. And of course, your wife is an astrologer of magnitude, I must add. And that would be Karina Kreisler. Look her up on the internet. She does great readings. I've had one, and a lot of my friends had them, and we all agree. She's a badass.
Yes, she is.
Yes, and so you have all of this on these tours and facilitating this natural nature happening. But of course, they were all designed to be connected with the cosmos. And of course, the cosmos ebbs and flows like the ocean. And they knew this.
They knew it. They used it. They knew it. They knew how to use it. The building and the construction till today was used to harness this flow of ocean you speak about into one point where you can stand and just feel it. And then the things started to add on, chanting, sings, prayers, then a priest, then a religion, then it goes on. But originally, it started as a way for people to connect with nature. And I think this is what we're missing the most.
Almost like the flow of nature goes through every cell and molecule of your body, which brings up this amazing point that Karina brought up into her show. And she learned it from you, who you learned from your grandfather. And it just, whenever I hear this concept, it makes me so, it's like the biggest concept I've heard all year long. I'm building this up, folks, because this is an amazing concept. All right, everybody ready? The body has 360 sensory awareness systems. Not five, like hearing, seeing, smelling, etc. Wow. 360. And I've been working with this energetically. And actually, I have led a class on this recently because I do meditation classes or activation classes, becoming quantum conscious classes in Austin, Texas. And so I had to share this, and everybody was kind of blown away. It's been a journey. With 360 sensory awareness systems, You think about how you want to explain this. And before you do, I want to tell everybody that you are on Becoming Quantum Conscious. I am Bart Sharp, and you are on the United Public Radio Network and UFO Paranormal Radio Network, 107.7 and 105.3 out of New Orleans, Louisiana. And we are on Roku, UPRN website, of course, on the radio, Facebook, YouTube, and other internet platforms. And today we are talking about the ancient mysteries of Egypt from somebody who's been there for generations, lifetimes, other realities, other dimensions. He is intertwined. His name is Hakeem Awyong. And so what's your ideas about the 360 awareness systems?
I personally believe it is this extension or expansion of our regular senses, but with way powerful way that can surround you 360. So when my grandfather started to explain it, he says, when you see somebody in a dream, your eyes is actually closed, but you only say, I saw you in a dream, because you don't know another label or a way to identify it. You didn't use your eyes, but you saw him somehow. And a similar way, you can see many without using your eyes. And these will be the deeper dimensions of this sense, which is being able to see. Same as listening all. And more of our, what the ancient called ka. And the ka is not the spirit. It's different than the spirit. The spirit goes to the afterlife. This is what the ancient used to think. And the ka is your etherical body here on this realm. And it can go for you, see for you, tell you stuff, teach you things. It have the understandings of your ancestors. So they represented our subconsciousness, our subconscious, where this bird called the ka, which is can travel, look for you, hear for you. And this is how it can be like similar of your senses, but way stronger.
That's a very fascinating concept, and I've never heard it exactly stated like that, but it makes total sense that this is something of you in a human form that can access all of this information, and it's kind of your possibility that you can access more of this through this 360 sensory system concept, that the more you're attuned to all of these vibrations and designs and patterns and harmonics inside and outside your body, you're actually interacting with the call.
Exactly. It's yours. And the more you are clear on this side, the more you learn easier, faster, the more you can feel the truth, the more you can think of somebody and then he's at the door.
Yes.
Or hold the phone and then it rings. Or, you know, it can be very simple things, but it cannot be only our these five senses that we know of. Awareness of how much can we as humans be capable of, the more we know what can we capable of, the more we will be.
Yes. And it's funny, since I've been doing this meditation, my business and all of these things like that have just kind of increased, and that just feels like the easy stuff. There's other important things that I know that I'm working on But you know, if you had that ka body and you set your intentions, that means this huge energetic being is actively kind of working on it, so to speak. You know, I haven't been able to cure my inflammation issues that are currently in my left elbow and hand with it, but I'm working on it. It's interesting. I did heal my cat. It seemed like I did this meditation. My cat was deathly ill and kept laying beside me. And this cat never lays on me or anything. But when I did that meditation, she just jumped on it. And she kept jumping on it. And I got it. Oh, she's wanting me to help her. And then, you know, she was fine in 2 days. So I think there's a lot of potential with this, the 360 sensory awareness systems. And just to throw out some fun ideas, if you are using these two discs and moving them in a clockwise and counterclockwise direction, you could be levitating them and spinning yourself using your ka body to do that. Almost as that they're all interacting together. Because levitation is something some people are doing even today. Just food for thought. Any reflections?
I think also the idea of the levitation or the perfection in building can be, as you said, had a take a help or strong awareness from a senses like that by acknowledging it and by the knowledge of understanding each matter from this ka or the thing that have been here older than me tried more. If it's just teachings, it is not something it's not something bad. This is
yes.
It can be great just knowing what is my real emotions is, how can I help other, how can I move around this force of nature, because I'm part of it. The ancient believed we as humans are part and connected strongly to nature, and our job is to become as the memory of it, which is learn and fail and try and teach the next generation and keep doing the same thing till we reach perfection. And perfection in us will come with the forgiveness and love and the 42 laws of man, which is actually a very interesting thing when you mentioned, yes. When you mentioned the how the car can help building and also how can it build a system for the people to live with. The 42 laws of Ma'at shows a very beautiful way of understanding consciousness for the ancient Egyptian.
Are you saying the 42 laws of man?
Ma'at.
Okay, what's that word?
Ma'at, sorry. Ma'at is the justice, the goddess of justice. She made that 42 rules for the people to walk onto. And these are was a foundation the Egyptian built it to live with it. That says, I didn't cut a tree. I didn't pollute the Nile. I didn't wish for what my neighbor have. It's things like that, but it is fascinating. Yeah. How can a primitive human being, as the archaeologists named the ancient Egyptians for till today, would reach this amount of awareness and understanding how to respect nature and respect each other's.
And they sound like probably practical laws, you know, like love thy neighbor. It's almost has probably similarities to the Ten Commandments. However, whenever you start to function in that harmony with other people,
thank
then
you.
Something yes. else opens up inside of you.
more light, more yes. understanding, more knowledge of what is surrounding you. So it is will be make it easier if you want to use nature if you're part of it. But I think now we've been separated big time.
We have. And it sounds like this is something you practice. And in my own way, I practice that too. You know, what I found in spiritual development is that whenever I moved a lot of my angst and repressed emotions, my love opened up to where it just felt natural. And when the natural love starts to show up, then the 360 awareness type of concepts open even greater with that.
Yes, yes, I believe
and,
so.
And here you are, and Karina, leading people on tours with this background and this backdrop. And my assumption would be is that you would be kind of a conduit for that whole consciousness and that whole chemistry or synchronicity of the pyramids, the sites, and your own embodiment, all of that coming together, which then transfers to your tourists. And they get a phenomenal experience. I'm doing a little spin for your tour, and this would be the gebandnutjourneys.com, and that'd be gebandnutjourneys.com to sign up for this tour in October. I'm a believer in it because I got to know Karina. We were housemates for a few months, and she was one of the smartest people I knew. And then I heard she got married, and I and then I talked to her, and she goes, "This is the most ideal marriage I ever could ever fathom because he knows all of this mystical stuff of Egypt, and it's from generations, Bart." Because Karina knew more about Egyptian history and all of this stuff than anybody I'd ever met. And I would just, you know, keep asking her questions about what all of that was. And, you know, she always had a good answer. So, you know, I would imagine she's probably in paradise being married to you.
And also the other way around, I get to have free sessions all the time.
Yes, she's an astrologer of magnitude. So all of that comes to the table. And you know, when you bring up that type of consciousness and you're interacting with it, it just opens the world more. I mean, it's a service to people as they do a tour.
Yes. I've seen it when I worked with my auntie. She'd been doing this for years, and it changed a lot of people's lives, a lot of people, just by more connection to nature and being like, go back in time, it feels like. And we're also following a foundation that my grandfather established called the Nine Initiations. And he made it to use the temple exactly as the priest used to use it, so we can feel what is inside. So we do the ritual exactly as the priest used to use in the temple, purifying ourselves, moving to the Holy of Holies, you know, step by step in each temple, and each temple have a purpose, clarifying the karma or aligning the masculine and the feminine in the body. Or many, and it is something I really loved from the first time I went, and I felt like I need to like gather everybody I know and everybody I don't know and make them feel the same feeling I got when I felt when I entered these places one after the other and understand. It's like I wanted to show it to everybody immediately, like something is great is right there.
That's wonderful explanation. I'm reading this book by Krishna Rose called Magdalene in Red. She'll be on the show next week. I'm just doing a spin for her. But she really talks about anointing and how it's almost like the transference of what you know of God and what God flows inside of you like nature. And through that anointment, you transfer that to the other person. It's a communion of all of who you are. And your call body would probably be part of that transference. Am I following you?
Yes, absolutely right. And nowadays, when I look at many people reaching the same understanding of the ancient Egyptian with a different footsteps, looking at the stars or looking at the journey of holy people or looking into a different science and reach the same truth the ancient Egyptian reach, that make me go back to my grandfather, believe when he says that at a certain time, knowledge will have to explode out and starts to go again. The time that it was hidden or dark, light will show up, and it's a new time era where people ask for more awareness and knowledge.
And that's what you're talking about when you talk about, I guess, the five phases of the sun, but it really feels very similar, if not exactly, what we are experiencing coming into the age of Aquarius.
The ancient Egyptian named it Khepr, and it means to become or new dawn. It's symbolized with a scarab pushing the sun up in the morning as a new dawn, an idea of a new dawn. And they pick the Homo Aphrodite creature that have the male and the female so he can birth himself by himself.
Wow. Isn't that interesting with all the, transsexual people all popping up like it's, like it's the big thing. But it's following that same type of consciousness of people wanting oneness.
Oneness. It is all about oneness, to become same. No labels, just us, new, like babies, humans. Mm. Don't care if a boy or girl, don't care if this or that. None of the labels matters. I'm here, new, with light and discovering. This is,
Indeed. And it's just such a great concept. And we're leaving an era. And it's so funny because it's, as you describe it, it's like exactly what's happening here. This is an age of misinformation, the internet, and all of these people, at least in America, it's like we have all of these news channels that tell different stories, and they do not report news, they just report opinions, which confuses people because they're not really, they're hearing somebody else's point of view, like off the street or something. And so it is an age of confusion. It's an age of people fighting of you're wrong and I'm right polarity. And this is the old age that we're leaving.
Yeah, the age of the hide or the hidden. The ancients called them the hidden Amun.
And this is all around the cycles of the sun. It's almost like, from what I read, it's, and please correct me if I'm wrong, it's symbolic of basically the daily cycle of the sun in relation to the earth. But also, this goes through a thousands of year cycle as well.
Yes. Yes. The great cycle. We call it the great cycle.
Yes.
The moon is the longest one.
Okay. Which one is that?
A moon is the one that is getting over, like the hidden one and the dark one, getting over, starting the new one, Khepr, or the age of Aquarius, which is oneness and knowledge, more awareness of ourselves. Ending of that cycle, beginning of that one.
And I'm going to say these to the cycle so everybody will kind of get what we're saying. Hepler is K-H-E-P-E-R. That's the first cycle. And then it goes into Ra, which is the stubborn. It refers to the energy or impetus to learn and evolve and just that, you know, enthusiasm. Om, did I get that right? Which is at noontime in the sun, it's about the wisdom, the zenith of coming that together. Aten, A-T-E-N. Maturity, becoming wiser. And then Amon, which is A-M-U-N.
Yes. Which is, by the way, Amun is the word that we use, all of us today, to pray. All languages, all religion, end their prayers with Amin.
Amen. Or as we say in Amen. And
Amen.
I keep wanting to bring this up to some of my friends who are very conservative, that they're really praying using ancient Egyptian rituals. Egyptian name.
And in all the religions, in all over the world, Muslims, in Egypt here, all over, after every braille, it is Amen. And the ancient, it was very important to enlighten the body. The three letters, they are part of nature as well. The A, when you starts to meditate using it, is high, rings in the crown of yours. And the M is central, the third eye, and the N is deeper, a little, so inside of you. It helps to channel. So the three ways from up, from up to down, from up to your head, from, you know, to collect. His priest is very strong, used to be the strongest, and he had lots of knowledge that decided to hide. This is comes from his own name, the hidden. Amun means the hidden.
It's almost like if you were really adept at this prayer of saying this Amun, your whole body would resonate and activate with it as you said it vibrationally, and it would extend out, which is the whole purpose of doing Om. Or, you know, one of the favorite techniques I love with Om is to say it silently and place it in various parts of my body to create a vibration there. And it sounds like it would apply with this. I'm really excited about trying it. I'm a visceral person. I like the feelings of expanding consciousness in my body. It's a vibrational experience. This is great food for thought. It's beyond intellect. We are coming to the end of our show. And so, Hakim, I always ask people if there's, you know, an ending message that you would like to give people. And while you think about that ending message of what you would like to tell people, I'm going to tell everybody that you are listening to Hakim Alwan of Egypt, in the Ancient Mysteries of Egypt. And he and his wife, Karina, lead GebAndNutJourneys.com. And they are doing tours this coming fall. And so if you go to GebAndNutJourneys.com, you will find their website and get all of that information. But also, I am Bart Sharp, and this is Becoming Quantum Conscious on United Public Radio Network and UFO Paranormal Radio Network on 107.7 and 105.3 out of New Orleans, Louisiana. And we are heard on the UPRN website, Roku, which is a cable television show, or cable network, excuse me, and YouTube, Facebook, and other internet platforms. So next week we have Krishna Rose, and it will be this fabulous book on Magdalene in Red. I'm in the middle of this book, and it's hard to put down, very daring story about Mary Magdalene and Jesus in a fictional standpoint. But it's so well written. So I'm really excited about Krishna Rose being on the show. And so, Akeem, what would you like to tell everybody?
For everybody, I'd like to give them a little gift of ours. It is a compass that we use to make sure we feel good. This principle goes when you ask yourself, am I doing the right thing with the right people at the right time in the right place? And these four questions, when you ask yourself anytime, making sure all is adjusted, that means you're walking on a right path for yourself. The feelings and emotions is our own compass, was given to us for us to feel better. So use it to feel better. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening to me. Sorry if I mispronounced anything. You know, English is my second language, not the first one.
You speak quite well.
And I really cannot imagine that the hour already passed. I can talk to you for a week, actually.
That means you gotta come back.
Yeah, I hope. And thank you very much for having me on your show.
It's really a pleasure. It's been all of mine. It's just been a great hour here. And thank you so much, Hakeem. And we'll be in touch. Thank you.
Yeah, please. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.